Mr. President, would you like us to roll? Okay, we're rolling.
We'll call the regular meeting of the Cambria Community Services District to order. If you would rise and join me in the flag salute, please. Today. We didn't have a closed session last time, did we?
No closed session, nothing
okay,
to report.
No report from that. So we'll move on to item two, special reports. So the Sheriff's Department, Senior Deputy Todd, Steve.
Good afternoon. Sheriff's Department responded to just a little over 300 calls for service last month. Nothing out of the ordinary. I reviewed the entire thing. There's been a lot more proactive traffic stops downtown by deputies, just kind of out there roaming around looking for things going on, trying to stop the burglaries and the thefts and things like that. Have had quite a bit of probation activity, helping out probation. They've been extremely proactive these last couple of months. We have three new hires that are starting. It actually started a week ago last Monday. They actually come out on the patrol this Sunday. So I'll have Deputy Lomelli riding with me for the next 6 weeks. I had a couple of school issues. I went and spoke at the school board meeting last week, dealing with some students. I'm working with the not only the board but also each of the schools, and that seems to be progressing well. North Coast Advisory Council brought some things to my attention, some excessive speed on Windsor Boulevard. I've been in contact with the California Highway Patrol to get them over there. The radar trailer has been in and out of there. Doesn't seem to be doing the effect that the residents on that particular hill would like. So we're going to go ahead and have CHP go out there and maybe run some radar and take care of some things for us. I left some ID theft brochures from our bureau on the back table. They're there. 530.5 ID theft, kind of the thing that I want to talk about this month. Basically just securing your information on the internet, watching your mailbox, things like that. People get a hold of your Social Security number, California driver's license number, things like that. They can take you for a ride fairly quickly. Keep track of your credit scores, contact those, you know, Equifax and the other two fairly frequently, and keep up on that stuff, and you'll prevent a lot of hassle down the road. So anybody have any questions or comments from the board, the public?
Any questions? I have one question. I, in closing down my office and going through the storage, I ran into a whole bunch of gun locks.
Okay.
Would you?
We can take a look at them. I'm not sure if they're up to currency.
Bench there across from the cookie crock. And so I think we ought to begin to recognize some of these things. And then we can't go without recognizing the Historical Society, I think, this month. They have brought great attention to the community with the Scarecrow Festival. I'm surprised we're having speeding problems on Main Street, because that doesn't seem to be a problem right now, trying to get down Main Street. I thought it slowed the traffic down tremendously on Main Street. And I don't know, Director Thompson, would you like to?
I would just like to add, President Cliff, that our original thought was to have the Historical Society here for a grand hoo-ha, a proclamation and so forth, but they were of the mind that it went beyond their contribution to the hundreds of volunteers and residents and artists in this community who participated. And I think that as a business person, I know it's difficult to quantify how much increased business came into town this month, but I'm just from speaking to people that shopped and came in, we had people from all over the county and beyond who came here specifically to see the scarecrows, and then certainly they stayed and participated in business activities in town. And certainly, again, many thanks to the Historical Society and to the main instigators, who I won't name because they don't want me to, but we all know who they are, and others. And I think it really was a terrific event for this community.
Director Berger?
I certainly echo that, but also there's, and now that we're acknowledging some people, the Native Daughters of the Golden West were out cleaning trash cans, just took it upon themselves, picking up trash. They need to be recognized for doing an excellent job just on their own, rolling up their sleeves and doing something. I think it's a great example that other people can think about. They're trying to reintroduce Squib Days, and I think you talked about that last month, but you know that activity is just happening, and that's the kind of community we have. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positive things going on, and I think we should take time in our meeting to acknowledge those. So in the future meetings, directors, feel free to we don't have to make a formal presentation or anything like that, but I think it's appropriate that we do acknowledge upon.
For the agenda, which came out last Friday, to find an article related to a meeting that was held Tuesday night at the fire department regarding the slow land conservancy issue. I had attended that very first meeting several months back and was very surprised that all of a sudden this meeting came out of the blue with no public, there was no public notice in the Cambrian. And when I spoke to Mr. Gruber this morning, he told me that it wasn't put up on the website till last Wednesday or Thursday. He mentioned that in order to get that into the paper, it might cost several hundred dollars, and I assured him there was no cost to the CCSD. So I did call Mr. Etling, Bert Etling, the editor of the Cambrian, before I came today, and sure enough, there is no cost for a public meeting to be published in the paper. But it's very upsetting to someone like myself, and the numbers, there was a pretty good number of people that showed up at that first meeting, to find out that there was a second meeting Tuesday night of this week. We didn't know about it. And if I'd not clicked on that little button at the top of the CCSD's website, I would never have known about it either. So I think in the future, especially where the public was involved and should be involved, it would be, I would think, to your advantage to let the public know. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda Rice, followed by Mary Webb.
Good afternoon, President Clift, board, and staff. It has been 3,634 days since the moratorium was declared on November 15th, 2001. That's a whole heck of a lot of weeks, 519, if you're counting. Even if you're not, that's how many weeks it is. It's been 5,470 days since the election in November 1996, when the board was effectively flipped over to a new board who then fired the general manager and stopped a desal project that was then in progress. There's a lot that's happened in the meantime, and that's a lot of days to be without an additional water source or a way to define what is the water issue, how much water do we have, do we not have. And I am very glad to be having a discussion again today about those issues with the Urban Water Management Plan.
Maintained in a manner that is to the maximum extent possible, consistent with preservation and protection of the conservation values of the property. The primary value and function of the easement was for protection, management, and enhancement of the Monterey Pine Forest. Almost $5 million in public monies were used to protect this 1,500-acre property. 900 acres of the property is in Monterey Pines. According to a report done by a forester for the ranch in 2002, it is stated that this is the largest contiguous area of native Monterey pine forest in the region. CAL FIRE's project would have affected 50 acres of the forest, nearly 6% of the forest, not 2%, as was said in the paper. Some of the impacts of the using this machine mastication in the forest are air quality hazards from grinding up resinous plants, including poison oak, the noise from the masticator on wildlife and the residents. There was no detailed archaeological investigation, and archaeologists are very concerned that there could be human remains that are even in that forest, but that hasn't really been determined. When you remove a lot of trees like that, they're capturing water from fog. It can further dry out the edges of the forest, making it more susceptible to fire, not less. And the clearing of an area 100 feet wide allows more sunlight and encourages non-natives, such as pampas grass. These are just some of the issues. There are many, many issues with the project. Also, on Staub's report of a report that David Schmidt wrote in 2010, He described potential wildfire behavior of that ranch as that there have been no recorded wildland fires for the last 100 years. No detailed data of fire history for the ranch has been found. There is generally cool, moist climate in the area, and lack of significant fire history can be attributed to the fact that of the cool, moist climate that we have. That the results of the study showed low rates of spread and flame for a vast majority of the forest, and they called it moderate conditions for fire behavior, not extreme. There was no predicted area for crown fire. The spread rates and flame lengths for that area are relatively moderate, and ignition probability for firebrands resulting from torching was relatively low over most of the area. So basically, the recommendations we had were not to use the mechanical shredder, to do hand crews, clear a much smaller area instead of 100 feet wide, maybe 20 to 50 feet wide, and instituting the Cambria Forest Management Plan was a big priority before this project can even be done. The problem is that we don't have the Forest Management Plan in
the consent.
Yeah, consent agenda.
Okay, so item 7A will be handled separately. With that, then we'll move on to item 6A, desalinization and water storage facilities report. General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, President Cliff, board members. I will turn the desal project update report over to the district engineer for a brief update on that. Bob Greshens, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Members of the board, I'll quickly go through the capital project summary and please feel free to stop me if there's any questions. Since the last month's report on desalination project, the Army Corps had signed a finding of no significant impacts for the proposed geotechnical geophysical research investigation study. They also submitted an updated coastal consistency determination on that to the Coastal Commission for consideration towards having it heard as part of the Commission's November meeting. Currently, State Parks' approval of a June 1st, 2011 right of entry application by the Army Corps contractor for the study is probably the most significant deciding factor on whether the subterranean data can be collected. Staff remained hopeful that the Corps' revisions to proposed data collection since 2010 have addressed the state park's previous concerns. These revisions included avoiding the inland natural preserve area entirely. In addition, the CCSD's completion of a CEQA clearance process, which your board adopted August 25th of 2011, was also mentioned as a past concern by state parks during 2010. To date, the Corps staff are coordinating the filing regulatory permitting approvals, the schedule which, of course, is subject to change and has changed in looking at this right now. The coastal consistency determination hearing with the California Coastal Commission, they were estimated for the November 2nd to 4th, 2011 meeting. That never made it on that agenda. So the earliest they can hear anything now would probably be the December meeting in San Francisco. The Army Corps wrote back. And then there's geotechnical exploration and geophysical investigation permitting by the California State Lands Commission. That was going to occur today, actually, in Sacramento. That got pulled from that agenda, again, because of concerns by state parks, which was reflected in some of the Coastal Commission correspondence. So they didn't want to go forward until they knew things were getting ironed out between the Corps and state parks. So that's still up in the air. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the state parks right of entry permit, which was originally submitted by the Corps contractor on June 1st. So things are kind of bogged down right now in the permitting, to say the least. Again, this data was going to be collected to just further define and to allow better analysis of the potential environmental impacts for the water supply project, EIR and EIS. The Corps has that under contract currently with the Chambers Group. So they're waiting for the data, and they'd like to get the data so they can move forward with that process. Again, the water supply EIR, EIS is going to have a wide range of alternatives. So by collecting the data there, they're not saying that's going to be the chosen alternative, but they want to make sure they get the correct data to, you know, make a good decision on it. So moving on, the Stewart Street and Rodeo Grounds pump station projects, of course, the initial study mitigated deck on the tank project was approved at your last meeting. Today's hearing is scheduling our agenda item 8A for the Rotary Grounds Pump Station Initial Study Mitigated Neg Deck, so I won't go into detail right now on that project. You'll have another item under 9C on the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan update, and that's to discuss the water conservation demand management considerations or approaches that we might want to consider, and to also solicit further public input as well as your input on that item. We are targeting December 15th, 2011 for that full urban water management plan to be presented to you for consideration. And lastly, I mentioned the sewer system management plan phases 2 and 3. That was recently assigned to me by Jerry, and I'm getting into that, but it probably would follow the urban water management plan getting through that process first. So that's on kind of the back burner with me right now as well. And then I did attach a capital improvement project summary table. So
you had an update because I had printed out the agenda for this California State Lands Commission. It was quite evident that the Army Corps was not on that agenda. Neither is it on the Coastal Commission, as you brought out today, because this has been, you know, this has been out for a while. So I didn't really understand why it was even in the agenda packet as being those dates, the original dates. The other item, though, that I want to bring up is Van Skyek's letter this month, where it says that Director D'Amico had graciously joined him in Washington for a full day of meetings. It says in the body of the letter, and we met with new staff for Senator Boxer to introduce them to the project. Director D'Amico has provided an excellent summary of those meetings. Instead of further rehashing what he has already reported, I'd like to emphasize two key points from our meeting that are worth repeating. First of all, if Director D'Amico is going to go to Washington, D.C. to represent us, then I think we need to have a copy of this excellent summary that he provided to the lobbyists and to the staffs that he met with in D.C. For the lobbyist who's getting $75,000 a year from us to just say, that he provided Mr. D'Amico an excellent summary, but instead of rehashing that, I want to see what Mr. D'Amico said on our behalf. And quite frankly, the letter from Van Skyek is it's just another one of those letters. He's getting his $6,500 a month. Now we're sending a director to go do what his work should be, and I think it's quite disgusting, frankly. And for you all to support it is really quite unbelievable. It's quite obvious with the report from Mr. Greshens today that the Army Corps is being put off on these agendas. You should be asking, you know, why are you getting any answers? This in itself, to be paying this man $75,000 a year and then to send a director there with a report that we've never even seen, I would like to be able to see that, and I request that I do. Thank you.
Okay, I have no other requests to speak. Any questions of the engineer? Okay, then we'll move on to item 6B.
Thank you, President Clift and board members. There are a couple reports that I'll, or at least the fire chief's report that I'll ask that he give verbally. And I did list the breakout sessions and the classes that I did attend on behalf of the district and the community, so you could get an idea of what I attended. If I continue on page 15, there is an addendum to the general manager's report, the finance manager's report. Just briefly, we have a $3,839,674 in our LAIF fund. If you don't mind, at this point in time, if it's the board's pleasure, I'd like to, on page 18 is the fire chief's report. If we could stop there, then I would continue on with the rest of the reports as they relate to water, wastewater, and facilities and resources, if that's okay.
It's fine with board. Go ahead.
Okay. With that, I'd like to have Chief Miller come up and give a verbal presentation on his staff report. And Chief, thank you very much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I don't know if you're all aware or not, October is Fire Prevention Month, and it has been a busy one for us. We've had a lot of activities on a lot of different fronts. In your packet is a breakdown of our response activity and fire prevention activity. And some of the special things that we've had going on this month, we had a notable rescue scenario that occurred at Ragged Point. Our TRT member of our department and the county TRT team responded to that. Fortunately, it was offshore, wonderful weather like we're having today, and we were able to utilize the H-70 helicopter to assist with that. Unlike the previous rescue a week or two earlier, where we had to do a haul system up the side of the cliffs there at Ragged Point, it made a very dramatic and quick rescue. I don't know if you had a chance to see some of the PowerPoint pictures that I put together on that, but it was amazing. Several of our members have completed the USAR training, our Rescue Systems 2 class down in Anaheim. This is part of a federal grant where we're training all of the members. I mentioned Fire Prevention Week, and I don't know if you're all aware of Mrs. O'Leary's cow and all of that. So, at any rate, we mark the week. It's the week that encompasses the Great Chicago Fire, and typically every year we spend that week visiting schools and kids, having tours of the station, and doing all manner of fire prevention detail and presentations where we have, and we were able to contact a lot of the local elementary schools and do tours and stuff this year as usual. And I want to remind everybody that November 6th is when we fall back, and typically we like to try to use that as a trigger point for changing the batteries in your smoke detector. So when we fall back, November 6th, remember to change your clock, change your battery. And I want to let every citizen in the community know that if you need smoke detectors and or assistance changing batteries, or any type of problem with smoke detectors, you can contact us at the fire department at 927-6240 for assistance, and we'll be glad to come out and help you. We have ladders. So, there has been a lot of activity and a lot of media attention to our fuel break, our shaded fuel break project, and I requested that Chief Alan Peters be present at the meeting today, and wanted to open this up if there are any questions that the board might have about where the project is or anything that I can do to answer or let you know where that's at, or if anybody has concerns about it.
I have one question. there's been kind of implications of a 100-foot clear cut. And what more is involved in this 100-foot fire break than what we require in our fuel hazard reduction? I mean, we have certain rules in the fuel hazard reduction of cutting the grass to a certain level, tree limbing up to a certain level for laddering and things like that. What is different from our rules that's going to be out there?
That's a very good question. There really is no difference in what we're using. Basically, this has been a very thoughtful project that the services of several registered foresters, including one of the top in the country that is used to dealing with Monterey pines, was utilized in the study on this and did a management plan that dovetailed into our current forest management plan that was grant funded by CAL FIRE back in, I believe, 98. Was that Alan? 99. And the entire project has been kept out in front of the community. We've offered, you know, several meetings with Green Space and the Cambria Forest Committee. This is done. The foresters have all gone on record that this is good for the health of the forest. This is not a scorched earth campaign or anything where we would try to be doing anything that would be detrimental to the Monterey pine forest. This is actually viewed by the foresters as being a necessary step to improve the health of the forest. So, and one other thing that I might want to point out to you, there was reference to a fire behavior study and the moderate fire spread type of conditions that would result from that. That is under our typical weather pattern. Today is one of these beautiful days. Anytime we get weather like this, that's offshore conditions. That's sundowner winds, Santa Ana. Today is a red flag day. If we were to get something rolling in that forest today, it would be a very serious condition. As a fire chief in the community, my job is to assess risk and try to mitigate that before we're trying to deal with it on a suppression level. And I see it as probably the most significant hazard to the community of Cambria. If you look at a map, you'll see that it interfaces the entire town on the north and east boundary. And you know, we're community servants. The fire service are community servants. If the community's in favor of the project, we want to move forward with it and try and reduce the risk here. If the community is not in favor of it, then absolutely trying to make this is a collaborative project between CAL FIRE is the lead, Cambria Fire Department, the Nature Conservancy, and the property owner, Ralph Covell. So if there's any in-depth questions that you may have as to where it's at, where we're going, as far as, you know, the logistics of where we're hung up with it right now, or, you know, the options that we have, I would like to bring up Alan Peters of CAL FIRE to address those.
Okay. Director McKinnon?
I have a couple concerns. Number one, the statement, our water master plan identifies fire protection and the need for water storage. We spent millions of dollars to create roughly 950,000 or 1 million gallons of water storage. That's to protect the Cambrians from fires. The fact that we thought this is a no-brainer, that we were doing exactly the same thing with this fire break. It's been proven, I know, and you've spoke to it. This is identified as a high-potential wildfire area. Our insurance rates indicate that as well, house insurance rates. It's unbelievable to me that people are standing in the way of this process. A $40,000 grant, if you don't do it now, when will you do it? Because it's sometime We have the threat that's overwhelmingly obvious, and we have to do it, and it'll be $100,000 or $200,000 to do the same job. And it seems to me it's been proven by your organization's experience, whether it be in Northern California, Arizona, as Alan has spoken to. Many times those fire breaks make the difference between saving lives and saving property. And it just seems like the one area that's most troubling is the Coastal Commission. And looking at their charter, the only area that they identify as being involved is landform alteration. And you're not changing the alteration of the land. You're simply, as you say, clearing it out and in a sense, making it better. Good forest practice. And it makes me kind of concerned also that we can go right down the street here and do mass killing of eucalyptus trees. There's no minor use permit. There's no coastal commit with chainsaws. I've heard two or three chainsaws is an incredible noise. And I see that as just a foil, if you will.
The masticator issue, I think, is overblown. It was portrayed in a letter to the editor in the Cambrian as the giant masticator. The masticator equipment is, you know, the name is probably the worst part of it. I wish they would have decided to name it something else, but it's roughly the size of a bobcat. It's a small piece of equipment. It has a ground pressure rating of 3.5 psi, which is less than human foot traffic. It's definitely an acceptable piece of equipment to use in this environment. And like I say, the usage is a thoughtful. The project is a thoughtful project. I totally understand the love of the community has for the forest environment here. I'm on board with that because I love it too. I just don't like being put in a position where the fire department is being viewed as somebody that would go out and actively try to destroy that forest environment. I mean, there's been a lot of research done and a lot of effort put forward, a lot of people that are qualified to look at the program of what we're trying to do, and have given it the green light and say that it's good for the forest environment, that the forest is overgrown in this area and that it's choking itself out, and it makes the trees susceptible to the pine pitch canker and everything, you know, in between there. So Forester Peters, Chief Peters, has shown some wood chips that show where some of these thinning, these shaded fuel break projects actually accelerate the growth of the healthy trees very dramatically after the thinning is done. You know, there's just been a lot of thought put into it, and I am environmentally minded, and you know, I definitely would not want to take part in any type of thing that would destroy the forest environment here. So I think this is a good project. I think I really, including those that are concerned that it would be detrimental to the forest.
Director Thompson.
Yes, thank you, President Clift. Chief, thank you for bringing some clarity to this issue. I don't live in Leimert, Happy Hills, Pine Knolls, or South Main Street, but my friends and constituents that do live there have unanimously told me that they support this project. It's not just a majority, it's a great majority, I feel, of folks that who understand the issues support the project. And notwithstanding some of the environmental issues that were raised before, I think public safety trumps all. And I think safety to our community, to the residents, and to their homes is the overriding factor on this issue. And there was, in last week's Cambrian, it was quoted by Chief Lewin from CAL FIRE. He said that he would be remiss if he did not bring this project forward. Cambrian is a very clear fire threat, and He said, if the community's goals have changed, we can use the funds in other important areas of the county. I think the community needs to let CAL FIRE know loud and clear that we want the project here, and that it's important to our community that we have it.
Any other questions or comments?
Are there anything, any specifics that that Chief Peters can answer for you in regard to where the project is, anything in depth with the county? The county has been an ally in this as well. They are working to try to make this happen. So,
I for one would like to see Chief Peters. I was at the NCAC meeting, and Mr. Covell was commenting on the fact that the environmental plan had hundreds of people that have supported it, from foresters and et cetera, and there were three names of people who had objected, only three names of people that had objected to it. But that isn't being published on TV, and I think a lot of people for this meeting look at this meeting and get the information. So since he's already traveled here, if he would just point out on this map the issues, I think that the general public would get better access to it. That's my thought.
Sure. I'll surely give you that opportunity. Do we have any
I think when you see the map, it kind of drives the point home. I was looking at this down in the county offices the other day, and it just looked like such a no-brainer. But I'm a firefighter. So.
It does follow the periphery of town and Bird Street as well. So, yes, Chief, if you could maybe.
Yeah, the defensible space area. Defensible space area begins roughly in this area here, and travels along here. And as you can see, this is the interface to almost the entire run of the community. I mean, it takes in the whole, if we had a fire that started out in this area and rolled through, it could take out the entire town. This portion is also a continuation of the shaded break, but is a strategic point to be able to move equipment in for suppression purposes off of the Bridge Street area. But this is the defensible space portion of it.
Director McKinnon?
Chief, Mark?
Yes.
Along the roadways, is there a stand of trees before the cut, or does it come right to the streets themselves, the break area? Where does it start relative to the roadways that are adjacent?
Take Bridge,
Cambria Pines
take Bridge Street for an
the,
example.
The Bridge Street break, it begins at Bridge Street and would start at the road.
At the road.
And then it would be thinned down. It's a shaded break that it's not a clear cut. It's a shaded break, so you would just have the vegetation limbed up and thinned out to 100 feet running along the road parallel to the road.
So it still remains to be relatively delineating the county right away on Bridge Street. And on the east side of Bridge Street, we're going to use hand crews to trim the area between the roadbed and the fence, about roughly 15 or 20 feet. And on the west side, then the treatment will just start, where the vegetation starts and go from the edge of the pavement, 100 feet in. So, and hand crews will treat the little area between the road and the fence.
Chief, how many pine trees in excess of our standard at the 6 inches at 6 feet or 4 feet, whatever it is. How many trees mm-hmm. like that are going to be removed?
Well, as was determined by Forester Staub for the forest management plan, for the Covell Ranch forest management plan, there are, depending on where you're at on the ranch, there's several thousand trees per acre of various sizes, and he created a diameter distribution and all that. But it's safe to say there are several dozen trees per acre over 6 inches, uh-huh. which is the threshold that you're speaking to. And then in some areas there are hundreds of trees less than, between seedling size and 6 inches.
So some seedlings would be removed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
And the purpose of removing those?
Well, for me, speaking as a forester, for a healthy forest stand, and this one's no different, we usually shoot for what is the ideal stocking level. I don't want to use forestry jargon and whatnot, but any forest is only capable of growing an X amount of biomass on a given acre, and if you grow that amount of biomass on 2,000 trees per acre, then you have a bunch of little trees that are this big. If you grow the same amount of biomass on healthy, vigorous, larger trees, then you can actually grow more, it's a more productive stand, and you have larger, healthier trees. So right now, these dense overstock conditions that we have there now are promoting, a lot of problems like the pitch canker that we know and western gall rust and dwarf mistletoe and, numerous species of insects, bark beetles and whatnot. And all those are nothing more than a symptom of an overstocked, just a dense forest. So, and as we all know, for the last 100 years, that forest has only had really...
And there's going to be a you're doing a demonstration of that machinery, aren't you? I received some kind of a.
Yes, through the Slo County Community Fire Safe Council, we have a demonstration planned for next week. They had some funding available, as you know, and we were able to come up with a project site on state park land, outside of Avila. So up in the Davis Canyon Road area, if anyone's familiar with Davis Canyon, Sea Canyon, we have quite a bit of work going on in that area. So State Parks and us came up with a project area. So we're going to utilize, as far as I know, in this county, we have two contractors that have this type of machinery, these mulcher masticator machines. And so we were able to negotiate with them to have both of them work side by side, and I believe one of them has two types of machines, so we're hoping to show possibly three types of machines working more or less side by side on a brushy ridge, and be a good demonstration of their capabilities. They're similar to the machine that will hopefully be used for the Bridge Street project. So.
And this is on state park property, approved?
Yes.
By state parks? For some things they do good, and some things they have other questions.
Mm-hmm.
One other question. The Land Conservancy, reputable environmental organization, they're on board on this and approved of it?
The Slo Land Conservancy?
Yeah.
Not the Nature Conservancy.
Or Nature Conservancy.
The Nature Conservancy are the holders of the...
They hold the conservative easement.
Correct. And they've asked their legal counsel to go, to analyze the project, which we did that months ago. So, to look at the project, make sure it's in conformance with the conservation easement. So... Yeah, they've been involved from the outset.
Okay.
So we have, and as far as the comments, I'm happy to say I'm really not aware of anyone that I would characterize as an opponent at all. The benefit with substantial concerns. So we are right now compiling all that, and you know, we'll produce a package at the end that you know, summarizes what everybody thinks of the project, and then we're every individual substantial comment that we receive, we're trying to address those. And you know, if there are issues we can't address, that really means the project can't move forward. That's the whole idea behind the environmental review. So, you know, we have to fulfill that obligation, and then we also have to fulfill Chief Lewin's, you know, his statement, because we really, you know, from our perspective, this is a, you know, has a really strong, obvious public benefit, and we certainly want to do it, but we won't do any, you know we do in the range of 1 to 5,000 acres of treatment like this every year. So 50 acres is relatively small, although this has a, you know, a higher than usual demand of effort and all. But we'd never really want to do a project if the public doesn't support it. So, you know, there's a lot of other areas we can go, and so, but we're real confident and hopeful that we'll get everyone together from, you know, the CSD, county planning, even the Coastal Commission that we all kind of fear, but we're hoping that it can all come together and show how community can work with all the agencies to do a really beneficial project in a, you know, a unique spot. So that's what we're moving forward with.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We do have a couple of requests to speak. I think I'll go ahead and take them right now, rather than wait to the end of the general manager's report, since they've reflect on the topic that's just been discussed. First one's Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Clift. I don't want to extend the discussion any longer than really necessary, but I did want to mention that the Forest Committee has had four meetings and two presentations from the Nature Conservancy and Covell about the project, and did submit a letter of response responding to the negative declaration that was put together by CAL FIRE about the project. The Forest Committee meets.
Yes, I just wanted to make it clear that there, at no time did I ever say clear cut, and I don't think any of the comments on the Colville Ranch refer to anything about a clear cut. I think people who are really reasonable and rational can come to some kind of solution where a reasonable fire break could and probably should be done. It's the size of it, the 100 feet wide, is five times the size of the road in front of your house. I mean, just even if you just think about it in those terms, it's quite a bit of the forest. The other thing is that the 100 feet didn't have to go all in a circle around the entire project. It could have been maybe 50 feet close to the neighborhood areas instead of 100 feet completely encircling and cutting through that entire forest area. So there's a lot. There are a lot of violations in this plan with the conservation easement itself. Unfortunately, the Nature Conservancy does not have the conservation easement posted on their website. In lieu of that, I think GreenSpace is going to go ahead and post the conservation easement on GreenSpace website so that people can read what is in violation of the conservation easement or what is not in violation of the conservation easement. There are no motorized vehicles allowed in that forest. So there's another thing. That's why hand crews might be able to do it, but having a machine, you know, running around in there is like against the conservation easement. We really believe there's just not enough money to do it right. But if you make the project smaller and make the width of the fire break smaller, then it's possible that, you know, it'll happen. We've heard a lot of opposition, just like Mr. Peters said, that there were hundreds of pages of comments. So it's not just a few people. Thank you.
Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon. Comment was made that I might have some off-the-wall questions to ask, so here I am. Off the wall. Assuming that we're discussing this, it must come under the jurisdiction of the CCSD. If not, you wouldn't be discussing it. If that assumption is correct, What about the maintenance of it after it has been cleared? Who will have the responsibility of keeping it maintained, or is this just a one-time exercise and let it grow back to natural resources again? Or will it become the responsibility of facilities and resources to maintain, as they do other acreage under the jurisdiction of the CCSD?
In Cambria, and this is where I may depart a little bit from my fellow environmentalists. I look at this grant for $40,000 and say there's something that we can use to help the issue in our forest, or part of it anyway. I've been concerned for a long time about all of the dead wood that's laying around. Here we are, a town that set a moratorium. Here we are, a town who's so concerned about fire issues, about water storage. And if we're so concerned about that, then we have to look at having some clearance of the forest. I am concerned, as President Cliff brought up, about the 100-foot area. I don't know why they need 100 feet. I think that's pretty excessive, quite frankly. But if in my opposition to desal, one of the things I want to do is be able to protect this area as much as possible. And so if we can protect the area by clearing it out a bit, because I've seen all kinds of new growth in the forest when I walk through the forest. I'm not concerned about the fact that the forest will not regrow. But I am concerned about throwing away $40,000 in a project that could help us, because I'm all about conserving water. And if this means that we could prevent a fire, and conserve water, I'm all for that. My concern is why this 100-foot area has to be as large as it is. That part I really don't understand. But I would like to ask CAL FIRE if this includes a lot of the dead wood that is laying on the ground, not trees that we're talking about that are living, but the dead wood. I didn't hear that being addressed at all. So if you could answer that, please. What's the answer to that?
You can go ahead. Would that include removing the downed deadwood that's there now, or chipping it? Yeah, okay.
The overall target of this treatment is the ladder fuel, as he's mentioned. And ladder fuel is all the live and dead fuel that transports fire from the ground to the tree canopies. So we're trying to interrupt that process by removing the ladder fuels, so that when there is a fire that burns through the area, that it won't have the vegetation, either live or dead, to be able to climb into the higher levels.
My house, both my neighbors would be gone. Obviously, I have to level their house. So the 100 feet is a little bit of a problematic in terms of us thinking about the way we live within the forest. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it would be, we'd like to know why does 100 feet make sense to the forest?
Well, the first law that's consistent with is PRC 4291, which is the defensible space law, not the local ordinance, but the defensible space law measured from any structure. So that's the logical basis for that. And as far as this project, we initially started with the idea of a 300-foot wide fuel break on the west side of Bridge Street only. So through all the planning and discussions we've had with Cambria Fire and the work that the Nature Conservancy did and the Fire Safe Council's input at a meeting, we came to the conclusion that the best and most efficient project, the project that would create the greatest benefit for the least amount of effort would be 100 feet wide along Bridge Street and along the wildland urban interface. Okay. So.
Okay, thank you. All right, then with that, we'll go on to the remainder of the manager's report.
Thank you, President Cliff. On page 21 there, the water supervisor report, just a couple key components of this is we did have all of our wells tested for efficiency, not just electrical efficiency, but pump efficiency, and it was determined, I had some concerns because they were as old as they were, that they weren't pumping to their maximum efficiency, and the test results came back that they are. They're functioning rather well, actually. There's been some repairs to the rodeo grounds booster station. Fiscalini tank was dove and inspected, and we'll continue to keep the board up to date on the progress made with that tank as far as some repairs. As you can see on page 22, there's been 149 number of services performed. Our wells continue to do good, do well. That's a little play on words. The water levels are up. Again, that was due to the good rain we had last year, but we also had a couple days of rain so far this year, and it was pretty remarkable how the wells responded to that in all aspects of our operation. So I'd just like to say, Ramon, welcome, and thank you for being here, and we really appreciate you being on board.
Can I interrupt just a second?
Yes, sir.
I'm also hearing very good things about Mike.
Oh,
and your new positions. And
okay, sure.
I haven't introduced myself to all of you, so I just want to say hi, Mike Finnegan, and happy to be here. So, and Ramon Lopez, he came on in October, beginning of October, and he's been nothing but a blessing, a help, and it's been great to have him. So,
yeah.
So
thank you, Mike. Like I say, we've heard good, very good things about your work over there too, since you've kind of taken over supervision.
And thank you, President Cliff, because Mike reminded me in an email yesterday that, well, when I started, you didn't introduce me, so I stand corrected. But just really a good group on board in that particular department. 27 again is Mike's wastewater report for the things that he's doing and his crew are doing down at the wastewater plant. As you can see, there are a lot of maintenance-oriented type of things. We'll continue to address those. Jim Adams, myself, and the district engineer, and Mike are working on revising the capital improvement plan that was adopted by the board, and I think it was December of 2009 that was approved by them. Since we have a new set of eyes, and since we have some new staff on board, including myself, I wanted to take another look at that. I anticipate that taking a couple months to complete. Bob and I will be out in the field probably for several days in the next month or so, crawling up on into down in things. So we have an actual hands-on look at what we feel needs to be repaired, replaced, and then we'll be prioritizing those and bringing those back to the board for consideration, along with some funding options. And so we'll prioritize those and base those on what we feel is of importance to the district. Kind of a fundamental approach to them. I think we need to maintain and replace what we currently have and make sure that those are all running smoothly. And then we can start, you know, expanding beyond that and looking at new things. But other than that, I'm looking for estimated, so that project kind of put on hold. It'd be nice to see if we could possibly use some of the board feet of the project from this shaded fuel break to maybe finish the erosion control project. Main Street trash cans, you know, that's part of that beautification that the board members have been talking about, and we had them pressure washed, but we have applied for a grant through our solid waste provider to replace all the trash cans, and I anticipate that being here in the next probably 3 or 4 months or so. But in the interim, I was supposed to get some replacement tops for those things, so I need to follow up on that. Vets Hall, 46 events. Now that the board has approved private parties being used here, I need to formulate some kind of strategy with regard to maybe generating some additional revenue for the Veterans Hall. We are continuing to fix this place up. Is Jerry here? Jerry still here? dry rot on the side of the building, we're working on that, replacing that. Skateboard park across the street, we're going to do some work on that. The bathrooms, the public bathrooms, have been an area of concern. We're going to be painting those, replacing the stalls and things like that. So just all part of taking care of the resources that we own and not allowing them to fall in further disrepair. You're probably going to ask, well, where's the money coming from? We do have money and cost savings in our facilities and resource department due to some recent staff departures. So we're just kind of capitalizing on those savings and reinvesting them into our facilities. This is an added bonus. Page 30 is the administrator office report. I also want to keep the board abreast on what's happening in the admin office. And there's several bullet points that Monique put together here, one of which we'll be talking about a little bit later on as far as conservation goes. I put a conservation committee together. You're probably going, he's committeeing me to death, but you guys don't have to come to these. It's just me and my staff. So we have a committee put together for conservation, which would be the district engineer, again, myself, and two of the administrative staff to really evaluate and look at our conservation program and come back with recommendations to the board. With that, that pretty much finishes up my report, and I'll be more than happy to ask any questions, answer any questions at this time.
Any questions? Director McKinnon?
He reached first. Eucalyptus project? You familiar with it?
Oh, absolutely. I live okay. Right up the hill from it.
Or anyone else be using our equipment, operating our equipment?
That's a good question. We have an in-kind agreement. If Carlos is using our equipment, obviously he's covered by our insurance. When they mean by other, just as a point of clarification, that is the three C's. And if we do use... If we do use people that work for a temporary agency, for an example, that come in and provide services for us, they are fully covered. They have to be indemnified. So there is no risk or liability to the organization by somebody using a piece of equipment that wouldn't be properly covered.
Okay, so you're saying that the CCC people wouldn't be using it. Just the...
No, they're not using our equipment. And am I correct on that, Carlos? And here comes Carlos. I don't think the three C's are using our equipment, but if they are, I don't want to give you any inaccurate information.
Carlos Mendoza. They're not using our equipment. We have specialized equipment that they don't know how to use.
That's
so for safety reasons, only trained staff is using that equipment.
Great. That's important. Yep. There was a statement a long time ago that said nothing grows under eucalyptus trees. And I wish I had it, but there's a full-page document that shows incredible number of plants, many of which are used in the front yards of Cambrians. A lot of them from Australia, where some of the eucs came from initially. But that was a misstatement. The other one was, it seems like there's nothing left. Are we saving the large trees for our friends, the butterflies and big birds and so forth, or are we doing clear cutting?
As it relates to the eucalyptus trees?
Yeah.
I know that there was a specific group identified, and that entire group, from what I understand, is to be removed. There is a couple and replanted. The stream banks will be replanted.
But there was certain diameter trees. I don't remember it. There were, as I recall, it was like 344, 350 trees total they were going to take out. Phase one was going to be some number, a much smaller number. But they were going to save the large, they had a special name for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering.
Specimen trees or
specimen
something.
Or whatever.
They're still there. We've left them alone. We've cleared all the invasive plants around them, but they're still there.
Okay, good. That does it. I guess they're going to be mowed down no matter what. But I do say, you know, it's amazing. This trilogy, which is a big development in Napomo, one of their hallmark benefits is eucalyptus growth. That shows it going into this beautiful resort-type development area. And we're seeing people like over in Los Osos, Sweet Springs, Audubon Society has seen fit to do the same kind of thing, take out the eucalyptus trees. And if you've ever been there at the right time, you see nothing but butterflies. And they're going to have to find some new homes, I guess. But c'est la vie, and I think I made Director D'Amico proud. At least I said it. Okay. Thank you.
Director Thompson.
To segue from eucalyptus trees to warm bodies, I think it's important. I just wanted to thank you for bringing Ramon and Mike to the meeting and introducing them to us and to the community. And as you have done with your participation in other community meetings where you've brought staff and let the community see that there are faces and people behind what's going on with CCSD. And I think I appreciate, and I'm sure other folks do too. I think it's a good thing to meet the people that are providing the service.
Okay.
Mr. President?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, one other thing that I'll forego my report at the NCAC, but at the NCAC, it was talked about the Nature Conservancy, as far as the easement on the property, is behind the activity on the Covell Ranch. And for Jerry McKinnon's point, it's private land. It's all of this cutting is being done on the Covell Ranch. The CCSD doesn't have any jurisdiction at all over that property. I think the reason it's brought up is, especially so loudly here, is to show support for the project. And I think the CCSD board does support that project, but it's on private land, and the maintenance will probably be cattle, and there certainly won't be a park path or anything like that. So,
okay, let's move on then to item 6C, which is member and committee reports.
Oh, goodness, the dog park relocation and so on and so forth. It's a really a full agenda, and I think they're doing a great job, and they're now meeting every other month as opposed to quarterly because they have such so many things going on. So that's basically it.
Okay. And I will report on the committee that was looking into accepting lots from and other discussions about forest management. There were several members representing a lot of different aspects of the community at that meeting. It got off to a good start. We need some factual data to go forward from here, and so that's where the process is right now. We're getting cost factors on maintaining lots and properties, and then we will move forward with discussions of what lots should be maintained, what should be accepted, how could you finance these kinds of areas. But right now it was a kind of setting some goals and working towards what our agenda will be in the future. I have one other. Mary, you had it marked both 6B and C. Did you want to talk on C also, or?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to give you that opportunity. Okay. I have one request to talk on 6C, Tina Dickerson.
Thank you, Board. My concern regarding the conservancy issue is that I hope that we will not be faced with any increase as far as an assessment on our tax bills. Because if that's the case, I know for sure I do not want to get another penny to have to pay. Our assessments on our tax bills are just, it's unbelievable how much we're having to pay for various assessments. So I don't know what your thoughts are and how, if you take it over, how you're going to fund it. But an employee for $100,000 a year with benefits, that was discussed at the first meeting.
When the next meeting is?
With plenty of notice.
Excuse me?
With plenty of notice?
As much notice as the committee members have.
Well, so that we can get to the meeting, I hope. Thanks.
Right. Okay. Anything further then under item 6? If not, we'll move to item 7, which is the consent agenda. Item 7A has been requested to be pulled, so we will deal with that first and then go on from there. Director McKinnon?
A few comments. One, Innovative Concepts, page 34, and Tech Express, page 36. As I recall, and this is going back over a year ago, the Innovative Concepts provides the web services and Tech Express the IT services. And initially we talked about, and the former general manager wanted to have them full-time, meaning contract versus a consultant type basis. And my question is Tech Express done their thing to the point where you really don't need them anymore? Or are they an ongoing service that really has benefits every month?
Tech Express is an ongoing IT service. I'm receptive to look at other alternatives. They're doing a really good job for us. However, like anything else, I think that we need to be able to, when their contract is up, to maybe put out an RFP and see if somebody can do it cheaper for us. Innovative Concepts. I hope that answered that question for you. So there, I think it's been my experience. Tech Express is very responsive to our needs. They do answer our questions and troubleshoot our IT in a timely manner. The logistics of our organization kind of complicates it. Usually, cities. Everybody's kind of at City Hall. You got building planning, public works, fire, usually police, things like that. So we have fire, then we have wastewater, then we have water, then we have admin, mm-hmm. so we're dispersed. So there's a little bit of an additional cost for that. But I'm a computer.
Yeah.
And we have, through evaluating the computers and the systems, eliminated a few of those, ones that we felt weren't really high priority. They were sitting possibly in the lab office, or that just didn't really warrant, an ongoing $50 or $60 maintenance cost per unit per month. We'll continue to do that and make sure that we're, running efficiently as possible. With Innovative Concepts, one of the things that I saw early on when I started looking at the budget is this figure also of $4,289 a month. And the original contract was for putting in a backbone system for fiber optics. And that cost was incurred as part of this. Yeah. It was absorbed, if you will. When their contract comes up in 2012, we're currently working parallel with Tech Express right now to provide us a service through Charter.
Charter.
And it will run about $129 per site versus what you're looking at here is $839 per site.
it's a little different, being
able to incorporate the use of the component that we paid for originally.
Yeah.
Their contract is up, and I hope they watch Channel 21, and they know this is coming. In 2012, we just don't plan on renewing that. That's an awful lot of money. But in the meantime, we have to have a game plan.
Sure.
So staff is working in parallel with Tech Express and Charter to incorporate getting out of Innovative Concepts contract and going with a much cheaper internet service.
Okay. That sounds good. Second question I have for you is United Staffing Associates, $8,000 on page 37. I'm just trying to I was looking at this last night. You give us 204 pages to look at, you know. So last night I was, let me just see where, 37. Yeah, couldn't sleep. I don't know where 37 is. But I saw, could you explain what those little spots? Yeah. A lot of those are just for one day.
Permanent vested admin tech three person.
Mm-hmm.
That was has not been filled yet. So that admin person, we're paying them through a temp agency, and so that person is much cheaper than a fully vested PERS person. The wastewater ones you see is he is no longer on staff at the wastewater department, although I'm trying to steal him a couple days from Carlos because now we're helping Carlos.
Carl.
That was Wayne, and what he was tasked to do is per board direction to evaluate the entire collection system. He has about 1,000 manholes evaluated and he has about 200 more to do. But now that Ramon's on, and Ramon is a PERS employee that's fully vested and fully burdened, that temporary position will go away at the wastewater treatment plant. You may see one more invoice. I want to use Wayne a little bit more. But these both of these, the admin and the wastewater position, both result in savings to the district, and I'll go over that when we discuss our financials for year-end closing for fiscal year 2010 and 2011. But these represent not just a day in time. They represent a billing cycle. And I think, Alan's still here? What, 2 weeks, Alan? What?
On those that might appear to be one day, the WE signifies week ending. That's
week
a full
ending.
Week.
Okay, WE.
They're
there you
all
go.
Full week.
There you go. I feel a lot better. Thank you.
I'm going to work for this agency when I retire. So
yeah, I was
going to
say
on a day. So
powerful people. Yeah. Final, and this is the biggest concern I have at all for the fire department on page 34. What in the world is fire department going to do for $10 for nail polish remover?
That guy.
There may be something the chief's not telling me,
know.
But I'll have to. I maybe repairing the fire truck so it doesn't rust, right, chief?
This is true.
Give me just a second.
Yeah.
Got to research that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please hold your investigation of that to less than so it's economically viable that you don't spend more than $10 an hour's time following up on that. Thank you. Thank you.
At PNR, property, or what is it? Yeah, okay. I just wish.
R&M, repair and maintenance.
I just wish that there were a page in the budget book for the vets hall. Then I would go away because I could just look to see what bills went to the vets hall instead of having to clamor through there and get all of the expenses that are put down to the F&R. Okay, so this for the month of September, $10,084.63 were charged against that budget page. Of that budget page, $2,069.31 were charged against the vets hall. All right. Now, when I take a look at the expenses, $12,609 was spent on the company that cuts down the weeds. I don't know how many months that covered, but at least it's in this fiscal year. Of that, $5,020 were charged against the F&R. That means that 50% of that $10,000 spent on F&R was weed removal for the month paid in September. You have this meeting wondering what you're going to do with the properties coming in and what the expense is going to be in maintaining them. Here is the example of what it's costing this particular budget page $12,609 to remove weeds. So that's my concern, is that you're keeping an eye on where the dollars are being spent. $2,069 spent for the vets hall, the way I interpret it. And the rest of the $10,000 was spent on other things than the vets hall. If, in fact, we're going to do maintenance on the building, let's do maintenance on the building. There are a lot of cracks that need to be repaired before it rains and the water will run down the wall and gets behind the plaster and bops, knocks the plaster off. We've got to take care of those kinds of things. Wood rot will take care of itself. Thank you.
Okay, since I don't think there's a need for, since there wasn't any change in 8, which is the hearings and appeals, and item 8A is to consider adoption of Resolution 51-2011, adopting the initial study, mitigated negative deck for the Rodeo Grounds Pump Station, and authorized proceeding with the project. General Manager Gruber, you want to present the study?
President Clift, board members, I would like to defer this item for some additional explanation to our district council, Jim Carmel.
Just a small procedural matter that we need to discuss. Mary Webb has pointed out that her husband Jim Webb's letter somehow didn't make it into the record. We have copies of it, and we'll hand that out in a minute. In order to correct that procedural irregularity, because under CEQA, Guideline Section 15074, you have an obligation to consider comment letters before taking action on the project. Okay. So what I'd suggest we do, and the district engineer has carefully reviewed the letter and will be able to summarize and respond to any new environmental issues that are in the letter, we're going to hand it out. And what I'd recommend you do is before, after the staff report, before you take public comment, maybe take a 3 or 4 minute break and review the letter so that you all are familiar with its contents. And then Bob can go ahead and comment on any new issues. Again, under CEQA, you have no legal requirement to respond in writing to any comments with regard to a mitigated neg deck. So I think that will satisfy legally, and I think it will give you an opportunity to look at the letter and to raise any questions you feel are necessary to resolve.
Okay. Then if you'll pass that out, we'll take a 15-minute break and come back at 2:30. This is a hearing, and so first of all, we'll receive the staff report on it.
Thank you, President Clift, board members. I'll turn the presentation of the staff report over to Bob Greshens, our district engineer.
Thank you, Jerry. Mr. President, members of the board. Yes, again, after hearing testimony today, we'll be asking to consider adoption of Resolution 51-2011 downstream from the pump station, as well as a 20% construction contingency in that number. After including the environmental clearance design and construction phase consulting costs, the total project is approximately $3 million. Currently, we don't have funds in the water reserves to complete the project. Therefore, subsequent discussions are needed to determine how the project will be fully funded, including various loan strategies and supporting long-term cash flow analyses. So that's pretty much what we have under fiscal impact of the project. For the discussion portion, I do have a presentation that I'll go through, and I can stop at the appropriate point to address the letter that was hand-delivered today that didn't make it into the packet from Mr. Webb, and I can go through that in further detail or respond to your questions on that as well that you okay. might have. So without further ado, I'll jump into this. Get this to work. Okay, just to give you a quick outline, go over the background of the project, an overview of the proposed project, the CEQA process summary, the environmental factors considered, the summary of comments received, the mitigation summary and then the recommendations. The background on this particular project, it was the water master planning that was done years ago by Kenny Jinks recommended replacing the existing station. It is in a floodplain, and a new station will include fire pumps to further enhance the firefighting capabilities of the community. I might add, too, not on here, but I think in the staff report, this is a fairly substantial, critical element of our infrastructure, this pump station. Pumps from the lowest pressure zone, or what we call zone one, that the Pine Knolls tanks are tied into, and the wells from San Simeon, Santa Rosa aquifers, and pumps up to the next highest level, which is pumping into a distribution system that's connected to the Stewart Street tanks. Not only does it just provide the Lodge Hill area, which is, you know, just adjacent to the Stewart Street tanks, there's a connecting pipeline that goes over to the Happy Hill and Pine Knolls neighborhoods across, you know, Main Street, as well as the Lemert feed line to the Lemert tank. So it covers a lot of area. So it's a very critical piece of our infrastructure. The board assigned the new replacement pump station to be a priority level one due to the public sub line. Let's see if I can get this pointer to work. Okay. Okay, what am I doing wrong here? Yep. Okay. Zeke, if you can help me out, I'd appreciate it.
Hey!
I'm not going to look at the new album for the Dark Knights or whoever they are. But, all right, I'll just describe it in words then rather than have further embarrassment here. Maybe it was Justin Bieber. I'm not sure. Rhody Grounds pump station site, you can see it in the white lettering there. The new site is shown. The existing pump station is just on the opposite side of that dark line and in our existing water yard area. So if you've been to our water yard off of Rhody Grounds Drive that connects into Burton, you'll come to a dead end. It's a dirt road. And the existing pump station is closer to the creek and within the 100-year floodplain. So it has flooded in the past, which further exasperates the need to replace it, to get the new pump station or replacement pump station up and above that elevation. Get the next slide here. There's also several pipelines that are being increased in size, pretty much in similar alignment to the pipes that are there already in the ground. There's a larger pump discharge line that comes off the pump station. There's a line that crosses the Santa Rosa Creek, which is received several comments on, so I'll elaborate a little bit further on that. There's a bridge that is existing now for the Crosstown Trail, and the intention there, that bridge was designed to support a future pipeline. And there are stub outs built into the abutments on both sides of that bridge that the pipeline connects into. Right now there's what they call blind flanges. Those get removed. New pipeline gets hung underneath the bridge, and that's where it crosses. So the intention there, and it's, I think it's called out in one of the mitigation monitoring points, is that the contractor would hang a support scaffolding off the existing bridge so as not to enter that creek area. We realize it's a very sensitive area, so the intention is not to disturb it or enter the creek channel at all. August 22nd to September 14th. We did that second circulation for a couple of reasons. Just we missed an advertisement, so we want to make sure it got advertised in the newspaper. We also had a request for an extension from one of the commenting parties, if we could, you know, so we're granting them their wish and having a little more time to look at it. It was advertised in the Tribune newspaper. It was filed with the State Clearinghouse as far as the notice of completion. And I'll correct that 9 to say 10 letters based on the one we received today that we don't know what happened to that. I assume it was hand-delivered and we just didn't get it in the packet somehow. Today's meeting will include public testimony prior to your considering the adoption of Resolution 51-2011. And the resolution includes adoption of a mitigation monitoring and reporting program, which is one of the attachments to today's staff report. Let me go back. The key environmental factors that RBF developed mitigation monitoring for in order to reduce their environmental impact or potential environmental impacts less than significant are on this checklist. And the ones with the checks were aesthetics, air quality, biological resources, geology and soils, hazards and hazardous materials, noise, transportation traffic, utilities and service systems, and then they had mandatory findings of significance. I won't go through all the details unless there's a particular question you'd like me to cover and we can get into it. But a summary of the comments we received included concerns over aesthetics, and those focused on potential glare from lighting for the new station, the character and style of the architecture of the station to see how well it would blend in with the natural surroundings as well as a future park that's being planned in the area, the perimeter screening that would go around the pump station. Again, coordination with the future park came up a few times. Biological concerns included points such as avoiding the introduction of non-native plants to the area, the potential for impacts to the Monterey Pine Forest and the nearby Santa Rosa Creek riparian habitat, which would include the birds and so forth, besides red-legged frogs and other species that might reside in the creek channel. There were some air quality concerns as well as the North Coast Area Plan. So there are various checks and balances by abiding with those plans that we have to follow as we go forward from this point on permitting and design. So those will be incorporated into the plans and the specifications during the design phase, as well as the permitting. And the permitting could include compliance during construction as well as during plan check. There's pre-construction surveys. For example, nesting birds is a critical item that typically comes up to make sure that we're not disturbing nesting birds and we're avoiding them during the construction. There's a noise mitigation plan called out, fairly a detailed one, and then construction phase monitoring, tracking, enforcement of the mitigation monitoring reporting program, which is the table attached, which explains that further. Zeke, can you hit that again, please? Okay. So the recommendations are to approve the initial study of mitigating neg deck and accompanying mitigating monitoring program, subject to any deliberations that you have today and after you receive public testimony. Authorize the general manager to file a notice of determination and authorize proceeding with projects subject to available funding, which would mainly be going into the design and permitting process at this point, and then to formally adopt Resolution 51-2011. So I'll pause at this point, and I'd be glad to go through Mr. Webb's letter in more detail and give you my assessment after I've reviewed it and read it in detail. And if our legal counsel or others want to speak up, they certainly may at this point as well. So without further ado, just looking through this letter, and I'd be glad to stop and answer any questions you might have. There's considerable comments in it that are related to the water master planning, probably the latter half of this letter. A lot of it is dealing with concerns over desalination, Army Corps of Engineers, planned sampling on the beach, which are not part of this current project. Overall, there's a discussion about concerns on sizing and flow rates and so forth. And let me just go through the first paragraph here. First comments are dealing with, well, you're not far enough away. There's a comment about desal, it doesn't apply to this project. The second paragraph, and I think several beyond that, talk about fire flow and concerns about that being an increase and therefore affecting the creeks. and the withdrawal of flow from the creeks, when in actuality you may just do the opposite. By having fire flow in combination with the storage, particularly the new pine knolls tanks, you know, you can essentially use storage out of the pine knolls out of the Stewart Street, and you can even drop storage out of the Fiscalini tank if necessary to help supplement the fire flow pumps. They work together. They're not just going to pump from the creek. So this is part of a distribution system which is separate and apart, really, from the issue of water supply to the community. Typically what would happen in a fire, Jim would be running the pumps, like at San Simeon Aquifer and Santa Rosa Creek Aquifer, and he'd be pulling out of your tanks at the same time, depending on the size of the fire. So we're not going to be increasing what's already permitted to be removed out of the aquifers. So this is part of a distribution system and not really a supply system, as this comment kind of implies in the way it's framed here. So fire flow should be thought of independent from the whole issue with desalination, for example, and the sizing of a water supply system for future growth or the existing community and for reliability. Again, you rely on your storage tanks and distribution system. The next page has similar discussion about the higher flow rates and particular about water supply and, again, related to what may be occurring with the aquifers. Concerns are raised about riparian wetland habitats affected by pumping. We're not increasing the pumping out of aquifers. This is for firefighting, again, out of tank storage. There's some reference to a past coastal commission about in-stream flow studies. I know that, again, this is more related to if you were to increase your supply out of your wells. I've looked at this issue in the past, and I can certainly research it further on other projects where this might apply. I know in years past, the district had Don Alley as it can just not in this particular project. So I'll stop at that point rather than go through all 8 pages in detail, but I would be glad to cover any particular sentence or paragraph you may have, you know, concern over from reading this letter during your break. And with that said, I'll. Are there any questions on the letter that may come to mind,
Director Thompson?
Just one, Mr. Greason. There was a comment in Mr. Webb's letter regarding the purple pipe laid along Moonstone Beach Drive. How would that be supplied?
Let me find that spot.
Bottom of page 4.
Bottom page. Okay. Yeah, again, he's questioning something that's not in the project scope. Yes. I believe he's asking, well, just to read this paragraph, 5 pumps are proposed, 3 pumps would boost domestic flow, and 2 would be sized to meet fire flow scenarios. There is not a pump for non-potable water. How is purple pipe laid along Moonstone Beach Drive to be supplied? This is not part of the recycled water project. We did a master plan on recycled water as part of the earlier master planning by Kenny Jinks. It's a separate report. That would be part of that overall system. So it's not part of the current project for the potable water system for this particular pump station project. Does that answer your question? Thank you.
Okay.
And I think I have a few more slides here, Zeke, if we can pull that up again. That was it. So, sorry. I knew I had another slide somewhere.
you knew you were missing at least one.
Thank you, Zeke.
Okay.
If there's any questions on
any further,
I'd be glad to go into further detail.
No questions?
Okay. I don't have any questions if it just requires a motion.
Never really be able to get an answer to any of your comments. The reason the Water Master Plan keeps coming up is because the Water Master Plan is referenced in the projects that we are commenting on. And instead of getting answers to our questions related to the Water Master Plan, we're in the circular argument where the district engineer just says that our comments are having to do with the Water Master Plan and not this project, which is simply not true. This project is for pumps, it's for pipelines, increasing pipeline sizes for future growth. When we talk about fire flow scenarios, it's not because fire flow just comes out of nowhere. The fire flow scenarios are based on future growth. They're based on having 4650 residential units here, which we don't have today. That's what happened with Pine Knolls, which is why I read the Pine Knolls tank appeal back to you in September with the Stewart Street tank. It's against the you won't be able to, you're going to have a problem with the coastal development permit with the county. Then we're going to have a problem with the Coastal Commission because it'll be appealed and go forward to the Coastal Commission, which means that this project is going to cost us, you know, way more than the $2.4 million that the district engineer is telling you it's going to cost, because appeals cost money. Pine Knolls cost us another $500,000 because of all the violations of the conservation easement, the problems with trying to plan for future growth without a water supply. We do not have an approved water supply at present. The desalination project has not gone forward to the Coastal Commission with an approval. Therefore, you're trying to build tanks and pumps and pipelines to accommodate a future water supply that we don't have approved. It won't happen. That I read the whole capacity analysis the last time. The 100-year floodplain, what Jim says, that this project's being built 10 feet away from the floodplain. It's not above the floodplain. It's still in the floodplain. So this is not a floodplain project. It seems like it's just a ruse, basically. He talked about desalination from the Water Master Plan because the wording is repeated in the Rodeo Ground Pump Station about desalination. Why are we talking about desalination in the Rodeo Ground Pump Station? Because that's where you believe you're going to have your future water supply those pumps. Therefore, all the arguments against the Water Master Plan and the desalination project come into play again. What you need to do then is take away the 50% quality of life bonus, because that was in the Water Master Plan, and that was one of the reasons that desalination came on top, which is what Director McKinnon said last meeting. Desalination needs to be completely dismantled. There's a lot more than that, but I hope people will go ahead and read in the agenda all the letters and the really comments, the response to comments that were really dissatisfactory. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda Reich.
Thank you, President Clift, board and staff. One of the things that I noticed in this particular letter from Jim Webb was an excellent suggestion that really should have been incorporated more robustly, which is to restore the habitat where the current pump station is. If indeed we don't need the equipment or the building anymore, that could be an excellent mitigation measure for any kind of other building that would go on to actually have that be part of what happens. Since there's so much going on, you might as well actually restore that to the way that it was prior to that being put there, which, as I understand, was quite a while ago. The other thing I'd like to address is something that relates to all of the comments and responses to comments on this project and on the Water Master Plan EIR. I can't point to a specific comment from the Water Master Plan EIR, but there were a lot of responses to those comments, mine and other people's, that said, this issue will be addressed more specifically when we get to that project, whether it was about desal, whether it was about any part of the Water Master Plan. This will be addressed when we get to that. So then when those same comments come up on the specific project, the answer is those were answered in the Water Master Plan EIR. Those were responded to in the Water Master Plan EIR. Well, they weren't really, because it was said that you were going to have a further chance to comment and make these, bring up these concerns. And it's circular downhill for the environment and for people who really would like to see a good project, especially a project that's needed. It's appropriately sized and is part of the plan that, that this board, the previous board, approved as being the whole big picture of what the town needs in terms of infrastructure. So I agree that it's disappointing, and I would like to see better job done. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Next speaker, Tina Dickerson.
To be drawn large enough to provide information on what types of sites may exist in the vicinity relating to Native American and interested parties. That was never, I didn't see anything on the overhead slideshow, nothing on the report. They're saying also that other federal requirements pertinent to the project under the CWSF RF program include the following: compliance with the Federal Clean Air Act, compliance with the Coastal Zone Management Act. And I mean, there are paragraphs on this. I can't go into it. There's not enough time. Protection of wetlands, compliance with Migratory Bird Treaty Act, compliance with the Floodplain Management Act. That's just one agency. Other agencies, there's the threshold for air pollution. It is exceeded. And yet, on this report, I saw nothing in Mr. Gresham's responding to these issues that agencies have brought up, and they want answers. And I find it absolutely amazing that there's even an agency in here that you're asking for funding for this project. They have questions. So good luck getting the funding if you can't even get the answers to them that they need. It's really, really frustrating. We go down this lane every single time. We go through the same processes that only end up costing the district more money and frustrating the members of this community terribly. I just find it absolutely, it's abominable. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon.
I hope you recognize me without my cap on. I'm just a citizen of Cambria, okay? I don't know how many other citizens of Cambria have taken a tour through that old dilapidated pump building. It has machinery in it that came from World War II. It is in horrible condition. That's speaking from the heart. When I look at it, and it just really needs replacing. Cut through the straw man, replace the building, put in a pump, and get this show on the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I have no other requests to speak, so we will bring it back to the board for any discussion.
At your pleasure, I could respond to some of those comments if there's.
I mean, that's the goal in and of itself, without regard to any of these other side issues that keep coming up. It seems to me that that is a very dilapidated, very hazardous almost situation, and it reminds me of my situation a few years ago when the cardiologist said, you need an operation and you need new parts to your heart or else you're going to die. And I see that pump station as the heart of our system. And when I look at it over there and look at the condition it is in, I am amazed that it even works. And so without regard to all these other things, from my standpoint, upgrading that, and if you're going to upgrade it, you might as well move it, is without regard to whether you get increased fire flow, whether we end up with a desal plant or anything like that. I think in and of itself, that is a real concern for the overall safety and health of this community. And I guess is the staff need reasons other than that to recommend us doing this?
Okay, I think that's a good analogy. But to catch the high points on what was raised, you know, as far as the future growth, the Water Master Plan Program EIR was, you know, a programmatic EIR that included addressing the growth inducement concern. I mean, they did that. The mitigation measure that was adopted back in 2008 included a build-out reduction program. So there was a lengthy discussion about growth inducement at that point when that EIR was certified. So CEQA allows you to tear off of a program EIR for specific projects and address those specific project concerns as they may be raised from an environmental standpoint. And that's what this does for this particular project. So the intention is not to go back and rework that program EIR, but to tear off of it. So I hope that that's clear. You know, it is out of the 100-year floodplain. The old pump station is being decommissioned. The intention there is to package that in with a future project that may move the entire issues, environmental issues raised in those letters. They didn't have to be responded to if they're already responded to in the mitigation measures or in the initial study mitigating neg deck. You know, just looking through it, I know there's a whole section on cultural resource study that RBF included as an appendix in there. So these points were covered. So I don't want you to get the impression that a silence on my part indicates consensus with the comments that were expressed. These points are all addressed here, and I'd be glad to get into further detail if you'd like. But, you know, in the interest of saving time, I condensed this presentation.
Director McKinnon?
Saving time. I look at what the general manager said, that his first priority is the repair and the adequacy of our present infrastructure. This is a project I consider maintenance. You're really replacing an antiquated system that is, as the president said, the heart, the nervous system of our whole water operation. And really what we're dealing with here is something that is being held together by experienced technicians and a supervisor. They have patched it for, I know I've seen it physically once, where a pump went down and had to be replaced, and it's amazing how well they do that job of keeping it up. But it needs to be replaced. Where it is, 100, out of the floodplain, it doesn't matter. It has to be replaced, and that's the bottom line. All the other factors are secondary, and I certainly support this project completely, above all the other projects that we have on our docket. Thank you.
Procedurally, Mr. Carmel, does this require three votes or one? Or does the kind of motion adopt all three of the A, B, and C parts under the?
Adopting the resolution will perfect all three actions.
Okay.
Don't you have to close public comment or close
the? Oh, excuse me. I will close public comment. I thought I did when I brought it back to the board, but I'll officially do that if need be. So what's the board's pleasure? We'll move on to item 9A in regular business. It's present fiscal year 2010-2011, end of the year financial report. General Manager Gruber.
President Cliff, board members, attached, starting on page 169, is the end of year budget report. On page 169, on the very far left column, it shows the different departments that ended the fiscal year with a surplus or a deficit. Attached to this report is particular areas or departments that have the line items that support these figures right here that show why we came in a surplus or why we came in a deficit. I'll just continue on through the report. If we go to page 174, and this is how we finished last fiscal year, If you go to page 174, it shows that the budgeted amount for revenues that we anticipated coming into the district from all our sources of revenue were $7,908,091. We came really close with regards to those projected revenues, and I'd like to compliment staff, especially Alan. When you're dealing with projected revenues for water, it's really difficult sometimes. You can take a benchmark, but there's a lot of driving forces behind estimating revenues for water and wastewater. The economy, conservation, and things like that. So within that $7,908, we came in about $48,000 short of the projected revenues, which was 99.4%. So real close on projected revenues all the way across. And if you look up those include utility sales, property tax, administrative service charges. It's part of the fire suppression benefit assessment, remodel and lieu fees, weed abatement, fuel reduction, includes interest income, assignment extensions, account service fees, franchise fees, facilities rents, inspection fees, grant revenues, and others. If you go to page 175, this is the total amount. So we came in under budget by 3.3%, or $262,272. And if you, a large portion of that was due to unfilled vacancies with staffing. So again, kudos to staff for that. There are particular areas within this budget that I'd like to focus on next year and bring back some recommendations and some improvements to the board. Total operating revenue and transfers in on page 177, again, about $48,439 off on that. Let me continue on here. We get into the individual departments, starting on page 195, the water fund department. The variance in the budget was to the positive of $23,990. We continue on page 181 to wastewater, again, to the positive of $26,512. We continue on government funds departments, again, $1,877. General fund fire department, we budgeted $1,678,522. Actual was $1,718,309. For a deficit in that particular department of $39,787. There were some circumstances for that. Finance director has listed those. Part of that was the $16,000 that we paid CAL FIRE. So there was some circumstances there that warranted that $39,000, and then I can go into some details if you would like. As we continue on the page 185, the general fund administrative department, again, finished strong there, $24,946 to the good. Page 186, it's our facilities and resource department, $4,057 to the good. Parks and Recreation, we budgeted 42,000. Questions that the board may have, but I'm happy to say, and I'd like to compliment staff that we finished, and especially compliment Alan on the great job he's done with keeping a close eye on our purse strings, that we finished the year to the positive of $262,272 after everything was closed out.
Any questions or comments?
I'd like to make a comment. I think that's great. I'm glad to see that you aren't taking that money and spending it. And I think the future budgets are going to show continued vigilance on this, and I appreciate that. You know, at the end of the year, I've seen so many people spend the money at the end. Thank you.
Well, we're spending some of it this year, but I did not want to finish the year like you've said, just, you know, spend it because it's there to be spent. You know, identify what our priorities are in these particular departments that have excess or revenue or surplus, rather, other than excess surplus, and then identify priorities and if it's the board's direction, one of which is to pay for the design of the rodeo grounds, the surplus used in water from last year, in addition to a future agenda item that we're bringing forward with regard to some of the things that we want to defer for a while so we can get that project built.
Oh, you turned your mic off. The only thing I would like to comment is on the page 175, that savings in the salary and benefits. A lot of times when you see that kind of savings, you also see a reduction in services provided, and I quite frankly want you to commend you and your staff, because we seem to be receiving more information, more activities, and more than I've seen in my past career here on this board. So I think we're getting more information, getting more done, and it's costing us less. And I think that should be expressed back to your staff and you too.
Thank you, President Cliff. I will make sure that I pass it on to the staff. The staff is not only taking on more, but I hopefully they're enjoying those additional responsibilities, and we're working together as a team. And I guess I'm requiring more of them, but that's okay too. So I really appreciate those positive comments. To Bob, this was a team effort. Bob worked really closely with the water department, myself, and the finance manager to come up with some additional fundings that were required for the design of this project. Originally, we asked the board to use the money that was in the reserves for the water department, and we need to come back with to you and ask for some additional funds. And Director D'Amico will appreciate this. Under fiscal impact, we've really identified those areas, and we've detailed them out for you. So with that, I'll turn it over to District Engineer Bob Greshens.
Thank you, Jerry, members of the board. This item is to consider adoption of Resolution 65-2011, adopting adjustment to the fiscal year 2011 and 2012 water budget and approving funding for the remaining RBF consulting contract authorization. And that's for environmental and design tasks for the Stewart Street Tank 3 project, as well as the Rodeo Grounds Pump Station Replacement Project. I'll go through the background discussion and then jump to the fiscal impact last. During 2004, the CCSD board designated the increased tank storage at Stewart Street and the replacement of Rodeo Grounds Pump Station as priority level one projects for enhancing firefighting. Back in August of 2006, there were requests for engineering proposals sent out to at least five firms. We had two firms respond, and then RBF ultimately was awarded a contract in the amount of $443,894. In May of 2010, that was increased by an additional $17,000 to further define and assess the potential impacts of moving the smaller Stewart Street tank up to the Fiscalini tank site. So the combined total of their authorizations of the contract is $460,894. As of August 31 of this year, approximately $252,792 remained in the RBF contract authorization for completing the remaining environmental clearance and design tasks for both projects. The original project or contract authorization assumed there would be funds available from the water reserves. However, the funds in the water reserves were spent on other capital projects such as the Pine Knolls tanks. In 2012, RBF billings, roughly $4,400, are being funded from the projected
fiscal year 2010-2011 water department surplus. So prior to the establishment of the general fund loans, approximately $154,000 was actually spent from the general fund reserves, but the prior board directed staff and the auditor to treat these expenditures as transfers rather than loans, and that goes back to an April 2008 board meeting discussion on the draft audit at that time. So based on direction we received at your September 22nd, 2011 meeting, we focused on an approach that used water reserves in combination with reallocating the major maintenance items that were adopted with the fiscal year 2011-2012 operating budget and the previously mentioned salary savings. So there's a table attached that shows those particular projects. There's 10 of those projects. And sitting down with Jim Adams and with Jerry, we went through this in detail to figure out, okay, which projects were possibly under budget, which ones we can adjust and maybe defer to next year, and that's what this table does. For example, the first item was the rehab of the Fiscalini tank. It was going to be $30,000. We split that $10,000 to do spot repairs and some other work this on this budget and then defer the remainder to a future year. There was no change in the meter upgrades. There was no change in the Main Street service line upgrade. The Piney Way water line, which is erosion, that's being deferred to a future 2012-2013. That was $25,000. The valve raising had no change. The water line replacement, Ponderado, that was deferred to 2012-2013. That was about $10,000. The Windsor, raising Windsor vault, that came in under budget, so there was about a $2,965 difference from running under budget on that. So Jim and his group did a good job in managing that work. And then, again, no change on the SR4 stream bank SR4 stream bank restoration, which is item 9 on the list, is getting deferred to 2012-2013. So you get the gist of what we did. We were just kind of moving things around, and we came up with roughly a difference of $67,965 by deferring things. So if you go back to the a net difference of approximately $61,200 would be needed to complete funding of the RBF contract, assuming you can apply that water surplus, that net surplus on top of that number, to take care of the remaining outstanding billings that may be incurred on that contract. So from review of the water budget and the expenditures to date, we estimated up to $87,234 could be reallocated if need be to cover that cost, and that would be approximately $19,269, which was saved due to not spending that money on salaries. There was a vacant water operator position that was budgeted to be filled, and then as of August 1, 2011, it's not expected to be filled as of November 1, 2011. So that's how that, and again, I have to thank Alan for his incredibly detailed work in coming up with these numbers, because he was invaluable in coming up with this. And then approximately $67,965, again, from deferring those maintenance projects that were in the original budget that are on that table. So that was the overall strategy and how we can fund that. So it's a combination of those reserves as well as the savings on salaries and then adjusting the timing of these maintenance repairs. With that, I'll close. And, you know, our recommendation from staff, of course, is to adopt Resolution 65-2011 so we can move forward with the RBF contract from here.
So, in summary, we're not adding any additional funds. We're reallocating existing funds to complete the contract.
That's correct.
Okay. I have one request to speak on the issue, so if we'll take that. Tina Dickerson.
I'm almost at a loss of words to understand really what's going on here. We hear from the general manager that we have in excess of $262,000, and I applaud staff for that. But then this
a report from, I would have thought, since it's a fiscal issue, that Mr. Labossi should be reporting on it, but our engineer has. But we're hearing about all of these deferments so that allocations can be made for RBF to get another $61,000. I'm going to say here very clearly, as Mr. McKinnon pointed out a few minutes ago, that the number, another $61,000, and we defer other issues because of that, that is not good. And another item, I looked on Friday for the agenda when it comes out, and directors, it comes out on the Friday before, usually the meeting on the next Thursday. So just to be looking at over 200 pages the night before is almost an impossible task. If we, you know, we're out here, we do it. And so get up to speed, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Director McKinnon?
Just a comment. A budget is always a plan for the future. And I think what the general manager is saying is what we expect him to say, based on the needs, the specific needs of that period of time, adjustments are made. But the budget is simply a plan. It's not cast, and it shouldn't be cast in concrete and adhered to verbatim. It's based on what's happening, and I think that's what the general manager has done and done it well.
Any other discussion? If not, gentlemen, what's your pleasure?
Mr. President, I would make a motion that we adopt Resolution 652011, adopting an adjustment to the fiscal year 2011-2012 water budget and approving funding for remaining RBF consulting contract authorization for environmental and design tasks on the Stewart Street Tank Site Water Storage Project and the Rodeo Grounds Pump Station Project.
Okay, can I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 65-2011. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Resolution passes. We'll move on to item 9C, which is consider water conservation measures as part of urban water management plan update. General Manager?
Thank you, President Clift. Board members, I will turn this over to Bob once again, and so he can present his staff report on the urban water management plan, and also has a PowerPoint presentation.
But I thought it'd be worthwhile to solicit your input as well as members of the public that might be interested in suggestions and so forth to go through this step. So I have a PowerPoint presented, and the intended outcome of this is just provide us some direction or comments or suggestions you'd like us to consider. It's not a real formal resolution or a motion for that matter. So without further ado, I won't just read the staff report. It's pretty well tied to this PowerPoint, but if you see something I didn't cover in enough detail in the PowerPoint that you'd like covered, that might be discussed more in the staff report, please feel free to stop me and I can go through it in more detail. Just to outline is give you a brief outline, background on the urban water management plan, the past and current water conservation measures that the district has had, some trends that are occurring in water conservation, some future water conservation considerations as we move forward in developing the demand, what they call demand management measures, and again, receive input from yourselves and as well as the public. Next slide, please. For some reason, this clicker is not working. The urban water management plan is typically updated every 5 years on those years that end in 00 and 05. There was a bit of an exception made because of some changes in the law that gave agencies up until July 1 of this year. Well, we are behind schedule, but we're making our way through it. The compliance with the state's Urban Water Management Planning Act is required to qualify for state grants and related state funding, such as the state revolving fund. We're targeting the December 15th, 2011 board meeting to come back with the updated plan. The water conservation is one of four main recommendations that are in the overall CCSD water master plan. The other ones were the improvements to the distribution system for firefighting, i.e. the, you know, not only Pine Knolls tanks, but Stewart Street tank, Rodeo Grounds pump station, recycled water for non-potable irrigation, and then desalination to further augment the potable supply. The past water conservation measures that the district adopted in 2005 were basically the wholesale agency programs, which is not applicable to the CCSD, conservation pricing, water waste prohibition, and residential ultra-low flow toilet replacement program. Those are pretty much called out in the Urban Water Management Planning Act. I'll need your help again, Zeke. Okay. Some additional measures that the CCSD has adopted that may go beyond what's in the Act. The CCSD offers hot water circulation pumps so that people don't waste as much water waiting for their water to heat up when they're early in the morning trying to take a shower or use the faucets. There's water conservation retrofits required on remodels, resale, and change of use, and there's quite a few details called out in the existing CCSD code under section 4.16. In the past, the district used to offer incentives to put in stormwater collection cisterns to collect stormwater. There was a program to convert water softeners from self-generating to portable exchange units. We found that some of the self-generating ones would, you know, use water for, you know, actually changing the salt on the resin, but also the valves would hang up and stay open longer than they needed to be, so they would waste water. There was pre-rinse valve replacements done at all the restaurants. When Ben Bohr was involved with this project, he went through all the restaurants in town and helped get those pre-rinse valves. So he was much a part of this conservation program in the early years and very appreciative of all the work he did in the past. We have remote meters with leak detection, and that to me is a pretty significant item, and I brought along in my pocket here one of these magnetic monitoring items. You've probably seen these in our office. You probably may have them on your own homes, but these are magnets that can stick to the refrigerator, so when Jim and his gang replaced all 3,800-plus residential meters, they're wireless now. So you have this ability to monitor, and the new meters have an ability to tell you if you have a leak downstream from the meter, which to me is pretty phenomenal when you compare it to old technology. And it does that just by looking at every hour of use. And most homes, you may get some false alarms, but most homes we'll have a period of time where at least at 1 hour you're going to have zero flow. Issue in response to the recession and everything else that's happened since 2005, for example, in 2009 and 10, for that fiscal year, decision was made that, gosh, we have to cut back on this program, and we limited the rebates to $2,000 per year on a first-come, first-served basis. Before that, I'd say, $10,000 to $12,000 a year was fairly common before that took place. So that was a pretty substantial cut. The rebates were provided only for toilets, and they're available on a first-come, first-served basis. $75 for replacing a 3-gallon per flush toilet with a 1.28 or lower gallon per flush toilet, or $50 if you replace a 1.6-gallon per flush toilet with the newer 1.28. designs. The hot water circulating pumps are still offered at no charge to those people interested, so that program continued unchanged. Items that got cut out of the prior program with this reduction were the clothes washer rebates. They were offered as high as $150 in the past for putting in a more efficient clothes washer. The water softener program was
those rebates were cut. They were previously offered at $100 per change out of your water softener to help encourage people to make that change. The water conservation officer duties are now shared between the water department, the fire department, admin, and myself as far as trying to cover those duties, where we used to have one person on that dedicated quite a bit of time to that. And we previously stopped the cistern incentives for other reasons beyond funding. Next slide, please. Some of the trends that are going on in water conservation and water these days include a greater focus on greenhouse gas emission reductions and the connection between water use and energy conservation. Although I will say I think CCSD was ahead of its time with the hot water circulating pumps, because that also saved energy besides water. There's more emphasis now on green and LEED, which is the more environmental design program for new buildings and future buildings to incorporate features that not only save energy but save water. So that's becoming much more popular than it was probably in 2005. There's plumbing fixture evolutions that are occurring. Detection. There's more movement on gray water. There were some regulatory changes on gray water. Recycled water might be considered more in residential homes in the future. Years ago, back in the 90s, was Irvine Ranch Water District was sort of the pioneers on putting dual pipe systems in commercial office buildings. Well, you may see that evolve into residential eventually. There are more evolutions in appliances. For example, clothes washers are coming out at 4 gallons per load, where the efficient ones used to be thought of as 6 gallons per load. Landscaping, this may not necessarily be that new, but there are more efficient spray heads available for sprinklers that use less water and still distribute the water in a more efficient manner. There are a few agencies offering spray head replacements out there for that reason. The actual irrigation controllers are more sophisticated and tied to computers and evapotranspiration rates and other things like that that make them more efficient now. And then there's still the movement out there, and this has been going on for a long time, is the xeriscaping or using native plants only, either no turf grass or buy it back and get rid of the turf grass because of its water demand, and then separately meter the outdoor irrigation. Again, that's not new, but if you have a large enough landscape there, the intent there was to have a separately metered service dedicated solely to irrigation so that it could be shut off if need be. So that's similar to demand reduction. If you had an emergency, you can go out and shut off the irrigation systems without shutting off the internal water supply, which is a more crucial need. Other incentives that are out there that have evolved is, there's a few agencies that have water delivery incentives or guarantees that they would continue supplying water even during a drought if the end user were to convert to recycled water and do other conservation means. So there's some kind of creative thoughts on encouraging people to convert to other water sources. PG&E does a lot of work with restaurants and businesses on some of the newer devices available, particularly for our area. We have a number of restaurants. And again, this has been out for a while, but, ice makers can be made more efficient, vegetable steamers that don't use as much water. There's other things that are specific to various types of industries that PG&E got into this because of the toilets, for example, almost 27%. And let me see if I can get this pointer to work here. Try my luck here. Let's see. Yeah, still don't have it mastered. Let's go back again, please. The clothes washers are 22%, faucets 17%, showers 16%, leaks were as high as 14%. I think Cambria does much better because of its replacement meters. But again, on that particular issue, I was checking earlier this afternoon to see how many of these actually went out the door. And even though we have the meters capable, we had 3 go out the door last year and only 10 the year before. So we have 3,800 meters out there.
So we can probably do more with these leak detectors and make them popular. They hold artwork real nicely to the refrigerator. So if you have kids, you want to see the pictures and artwork, there's a side benefit there. Dishwashers, interestingly, only use about 1.4%. So that's a pretty low demand. As you think about where do we want to get the greatest savings and where do you want to put limited resources, I thought this would come in handy, even though I'm sure with changes that have occurred since 1999, the distribution is going to be a little bit different, and you're probably going to have a lot less water leakage in Cambria because of the new meters. Next slide, please. So future considerations would include, the cost-effectiveness of the proposed demand management measure. And in all honesty, we didn't put enough effort on the last update on this, but we need to really look carefully, is it cost-effective to actually adopt that measure? So that has to be part of the update process to look at whether the savings are going to offset, say, the replacement water cost and the O&M costs that go along with the water. So there's an actual procedure called out in the guidebook that the state publishes. Again, future coordination is called. I recommend discussions with the Coastal Commission and looking at the local coastal programs. The Coastal Commission has weighed in heavily on this issue in the past, so I think they definitely need to be involved if we're going to coordinate with them. I mean, there's been past appeals where the Coastal Commission has actually mandated certain things be done for water conservation. Further coordination with the county is suggested. The county planning would typically look at a development proposal from a number of angles, including landscaping. So if we want to get involved in any of the more water-efficient landscape designs, there's a model ordinance for landscaping that gets adopted automatically if you don't have it in your, let's say in this case, the North Coast Area Plan or your Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance. But the county planning would be the key here because they have to look at issues like perimeter screening and tree offsets and so forth that go above and beyond just water conservation. But they would be the lead in looking at how a project's proposed and how it's going to be water efficient from a landscaping standpoint. The key here is program funding and staff resources, and that again ties into the cost effectiveness analysis. How do we want to spend the limited funds and resources that we have? So I think that wraps it up. Let's see if we have another slide after this. Yep. So at this point, I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. And our suggestion, Jerry, I was talking about this earlier, is just to let's see what the public may have. Let's throw it out for ideas and suggestions from the public as well as yourselves. So thank you.
Any questions on presentation? If not, we'll go to public comment. I have three requests for public comment. Mary Webb, followed by Amanda Rice.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to speak. I guess I'm glad I'm not sitting up there because if you were a director, all you would think is that the Urban Water Management Plan is all about just water conservation and landscape watering. The Urban Water Management Plan is a plan for the community to decide how they're using their water, how much water they're using, how much water they're producing, where the water is going, where the water is coming from, how we're going to have more water in the future. It's not just about whether we're going to water our lawn or not. So the plan needs to be overhauled. Right now, it is completely incorrect. The assumptions are incorrect on how much water we were going to use by 2010. The water demand data in the forecasts are incorrect. The 50% quality of life is in there, so all the numbers are totally skewed based on the fact we're going to somehow use 18 units of water instead of what you just decided last month was we're only going to use 9. The 50% quality of life has to be revoked.
desalination was chosen, and as the water master plan then got incorporated into the urban water management plan, with desalination was chosen using this faulty evaluation matrix, where desalination came on top of all the other methods of, like, saving water, having ponds, having off-stream storage, having more water tanks, because that's just the way the board did it in the past. But you don't have to do that. They can redo the urban water management plan, just like the water master plan needs to all be unraveled. In the urban water management plan, Santa Rosa Creek well number 4 isn't even mentioned in the 2005 version of it. So the new plan has to have the new well. We have a new water supply, and that needs to be put in there. And how much can it produce? MTB contamination has been remediated. That needs to be put into the new plan. The BRP is in the urban water management plan. We have no BRP. BRP, build-out reduction, is going to cost us $38 million. We have no money for it. Therefore, we can't say that it's a mitigation for rodeo grounds or Stewart Street or anything else, because we don't have BRP. We don't have a solution to the problems of growth. The capacity data needs updating. In-stream flow studies are in the urban water management plan. They need to be done. You've been told to do them, the board in the past. The projected water supply evaluation has proven to be invalid. We need updates on the effects of the conservation measures we've already taken. Most of the ones that Engineer Greshens has talked about were done in 1989. I mean, there's not a lot of new data that he's put up there, but we need updates on is the remote read meter reading effective? What's changed? Is recycling, the recycling water, like my husband said, there are no pipes being put in to rodeo grounds pump stations, so how can we have future recycled water that's explained in the urban water management plan when we don't have any pumps and pipes and stuff for it? And then follow the money. $2,000 a year for conservation versus, since 1994, we spent maybe $11 million for desalination.
Thank you. Amanda Rice.
This board has a really important job to do, and that's to make sure that the current infrastructure is effective and maintained, and to plan ahead for not just people that are my age, but people that are in elementary school and not even born yet, so that there is a water supply for them and there is an infrastructure to protect for them. The policies that you set right now are incredibly important, and the Urban Water Management Plan is a perfect time to be looking at those policies. One example. One of the requirements of the Urban Water Management Planning Act is under supply reliability. The district is supposed to describe plans to supplement or replace inconsistent sources, no matter what is making it inconsistent, with alternative sources or demand management measures. It doesn't say and or, it says or. You can use demand management as part of getting enough water and ensuring there's enough water for the district and its the people that use the water. There were a bunch of things that were listed that the CCSD has done in terms of demand management, which is the focus, I believe, of today's report, and not the entire urban water management plan. Since I haven't seen a draft of that, I would be surprised we were talking about the entire thing. But on demand management, there's been no discussion about which things were effective. How much was spent on those things that we've done so far, and how effective have they been? On the retrofit on resale? Yeah, sure, somebody goes and checks it out. Do we have something listing? Which houses have been checked? And it's a perfect time to be recording how many bathrooms are there so that you have some kind of inventory of the number of residential fixtures you're looking at. Because it does make a big difference, as that pie chart from 1999 showed. The amount of water we use indoors changes. Depending on whether you have an ultra-low flow toilet or not, can really make a huge difference in the amount of water that gets used. The cost-benefit analysis, let's not forget the cost-benefit analysis isn't just if we do this or we don't do this. What is it going to cost us and what's the benefit? There's a cost and benefit involved in having desal. If you're really going to look at the cost-benefit, don't forget one of the benefits of effective demand management, effective improving efficiency of the system, is that we don't need to build as big of a desal plant, and maybe we don't need a desal plant because there is less demand. It's incredibly important that you don't just only look at the one tunnel vision. If I may just have another moment. There is plenty of staff dedicated to doing desal. There's a lot of money, $72,000 a year for a lobbyist. $2,000 is all you can scrape together for conservation. You don't have a conservation officer. You're a member of the California Urban Water Conservation Council. I called on Monday, and this district is a current member of the California Urban Water Conservation Council, which means your MOU should be in good standing, except that you need to be doing your reporting. And that is, they provide a way to measure how your demand management measures are working and whether they're working or not. My final point, thank you for giving me just an extra moment. My final point is I think that it is very short-sighted to not take advantage of the resources available, and if we had a water conservation manager or a water conservation officer, maybe some of these things and this presentation today would have been much more thorough, and you would have gotten better information so that we could go forward on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tina Dickerson, followed by Jerry McKenna.
Thank you. When we have, we were told a few months ago by the general manager that our district engineer is spending 80% of his time on desalination efforts. And when I saw the overhead today on conservation, most of which was completely outdated. I mean, we bought a house here 14 years ago, and the hot water recirculation was going on then and prior to that. I see around town some homes. So there's one in Seacliff Estates. It's beautiful. The whole front yard is done with rock. My yard is primarily rock and gravel, and it looks beautiful. People come by and say, can we get a picture of your yard? And my water usage is 4 units every 2 months. 4 units. And yet we were told that under the water management plan, oh, if we have desal, we can increase that by 50%. Well, in the Senate bill SBX 772009 provided legislation that sets an overall goal of reducing per capita urban water by 20% by December 31st, 2020. The state shall make incremental progress towards this goal by reducing per capita water use by at least 10% by December 31st, 2015. We've all been led to believe, the pie chart, by the way, that was up there, 1999, wasn't of Cambria's water usage, but U.S. American cities. We can do better than that. Where is our pie chart for what we're actually using? So I would suggest that you definitely look into Slo County's landscaping ordinance. That's one thing that I think would be top of the list, and adopt it. If it seems like a reasonable ordinance that we could adopt and adhere to, I think go for it. But I really feel that the conservation efforts here for a town that supposedly has a water shortage and we're on a moratorium are really, really lacking. And I'm sure that there are many of us here who could help you figure out some ways of to conserve, which in our water master plan, recycling and conservation are right up there. But do they get any attention? And whoever spoke earlier about $11 million, I think it was Mary, she's right. Rodeo pumping station could have been paid for 4 to 5 times over with the money that has been spent, for the money from Chevron, the money that is still being spent or attempted to be spent on desalination. I really think, you know, this town is not suffering from a water shortage, and it's time for you guys to really lead us in a direction that will take us forward with a real vision for the future of Cambria that's realistic and affordable and conservative when we're coming to water conservation. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon?
Here I am again speaking out of turn, but I must commend you. I think you're doing an excellent job of keeping the public informed of our responsibility to make sure that we do not waste water. Statistics and all the numbers that can be thrown around really don't mean anything unless we are on top of the notion that we must conserve water. From Mr. Gresham's back to Mr. Hamilton, all through the years when we have been working with the concern over water, we have seen that the general public is using less water. The only reason they are using less water is because they have become educated. The education has come from the CCSD. Thank you very much for doing an excellent job and keeping us informed. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. This was an informational item, but they also did ask for direction. And does any board member have a specific direction that they'd like to talk with staff?
Well, nothing specific. I think, though, we have heard some good suggestions today, and I would hope that those would be considered, and when we come back for the final adoption of this in December, that you would have considered them for us for that.
Director McKinnon?
We're not all that bad. I mean, when we look at what we are compared to the rest of the county or the state, we're doing pretty good. And, you know, you look at it at a macro level versus a micro level. And one of the things that's probably important that has been brought up, the toilets are the big user, 25%, no matter how you cut it, of household usage. And maybe we are or should be looking at a larger budgeting for rebates on that item. But also that device, is it still $25 or what is it that you're whatever you call it, that monitor?
That's
thing.
Correct, $25.
But that's a rental.
That's a rental? No, that's a purchase, isn't it? Or what is it?
I'm going to defer to Kathy. Is that
I
purchase?
I could be wrong. I believe they were $30 and it is for purchase.
It's an actual purchase.
Okay.
So, okay.
I want to make sure.
And what it does, one of the things it does do, the things it does, is to define a period with a period of time it can state that it's leaking. The system, there's a leak, an unresolved leak, right?
That's correct. It has a little electronic flag that it'll trigger, and it does that by looking to see whether the home had a period of zero flow for at least an hour. Mm-hmm. So it measures this in hourly increments. So a leak would be that, you know, more normally when people go to bed at night, everything's shut off, you should at least have an hour there where there's no flow in the household based on their experience. So
you think of the many vacation home owners and so forth that have had major costs involved in a toilet leaking or what any element of the house water system leaking, and it would be wonderful if that vendor could provide that electronic output to shut off the water supply. That would be the icing on the cake, and I'm sure you'd sell a lot of them more so than what it is happening. But that's a good device, and I don't think many people know about it. It would be good to make sure that they do know about it and what it can do. But I guess when we have dollars a little bit more available than when we were back in 2008, when we did put in those more conservative numbers, $2,000 as a total, it's pretty minimal. And maybe we should look at that again for toilets for the starting point. But that'd be my thoughts.
Director Barringer?
Yes, I think a couple of things. One, I think Mary Webb's concern is where we're going to get the water for a purple pipe if we had it on Moonstone Beach Drive. I'd like to make sure that we look at that pretty closely. I'm also quite impressed with Amanda's suggestion that we have a water conservation officer, or at least make sure that somebody has that responsibility within the district, even if it's spread among things, because we are going to have this problem now, but also in the future. And I'm sure that that person would have gained some information from the council that we're members of. And I'd like to pursue that myself personally to see if that's some information that we should be using. I certainly get a lot of literature about water conservation, but I'm going to try and take a good look at that. I also think in our billing, we should bill or come up with a billing plan that bills for the first unit, and rather than having billing first kick in, you know, having a base price and then not getting incremental pricing until we go over four units or whatever it is. I don't know what it is. What do we get, six units for free? Yeah. So I think that's important. Point-of-use water heaters. I just finished a cottage, and I had to have a recirculating system in the cottage, but I wanted to put in point-of-use water heaters, but I still had to have the recirculating system. So it seems like that's an archaic, you know, you don't need recirculating systems if you have point-of-use water heaters. Also, you'll find that recirculating systems, especially in copper systems, will wear out your copper within 7 years. So that's an unintended consequence of having a recirculating water system. PEX is much better, but still, we should make sure we're on the forefront of trends and not just retain an old law or an old regulation that might be detrimental. I personally took out my pump, but it turns out it's still getting hot water at the tap instantly, because the recirculation, if you wait a couple of weeks, occurs naturally because of the thermal movement of the, just in case you want a tip, try turning off your recirculating pump for a couple of weeks and you'll find that it comes instant hot at every tap. That's my experience. And then we talked a little bit about, Jerry, you and I, we talked a little bit about retrofit points, and it's pretty clear that we should have, the public should know about all of the retrofitting that we've been doing, and if we aren't gathering that statistic on a house-by-house basis, perhaps we should. So if we do a remodel or a new construction, we should make sure that those points or those water savings are banked, and we can then report on our progress, you know, each time we have one of these master plan updates or whatever. It should be statistics that we keep. So those are just a few points that I think are guidance that you're looking for. Those are some things just off the top of my head.
Okay. Any further? If not, we'll receive the report and we'll move on from there and look forward to the December 15th for the final report. Item 9D is cast runoff ballot for LAFCO alternate special district member. Let me take this from the deal. The alternate to the special district has been a three-year election process here, it seems like, because the other process doesn't work. And what the last election ended up in a tie. We cast our vote for Marshall Oshinsky previously. Marshall Oshinsky and Brian Kowinski are the two that were in the tie, and so I would suggest that we cast another ballot for that position. And just as an example, you talked about 254 pages. Last Thursday's LAFCO meeting I attended was over 600 pages.
Wow.
For one meeting.
If you had a free dinner.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't?
No, I didn't. I only got paid $50.
I recommend that we cast our ballot again for Marshall Osinski.
Do you move that?
Yeah, I move that.
Okay.
Second.
We got a motion and a second to cast a ballot for Marshall Osinski for alternate special district member to LAFCO. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Having no further business before the meeting here, we will adjourn to closed session. Closed session will be at the office. Okay, at the office.